My name is Dean Whitaker, President and CEO of Whitaker Associates, a data analytic company serving the needs of economic development and commercial real estate organizations. I will be your host as we endeavor to see around the corner. Today we will be speaking with Greg Waltham, co-CEO of the newly formed Evansville Regional Economic Partnership, serving a 9-county area of southwest Indiana. Greg was named for the second time in 2 years as one of the top 50 economic development professionals in North America by Consultant Connect. He has his goal to build the most effective regional economic and community development delivery system in the United States. Ed Morrison, director of Agile Strategy Labs, tells us that in the future, regions will need economic development professionals who combine imagination with pragmatism, creativity with project management skills, and collaboration with focus. Greg has all of these qualities and a few more, Ed says. For the past 30 years, Greg has focused on using strategic public relations to build an effective economic development delivery system. Successful economic development is a team sport. It starts with a vision and succeeds with commitment, according to Greg. Please welcome Greg Waltham, co-CEO of the Evansville Regional Economic Partnership. Greg, thank you for joining us today for the Whitaker Report. We really appreciate you taking the time to have a conversation with us and look forward to your thoughts.
Oh, thanks, Dean. We really, truly appreciate you being able to have the opportunity. I always like the opportunity to talk about our region.
And speaking of your region, one of the questions I had in thinking about it, I know you've been going through some restructuring recently, and it's pretty significant relative to your overall economic development efforts. Could you kind of tell us more about that new structure and what precipitated it and where do you see it going in the future?
I'd sure be more than happy to. Basically, we took three legacy organizations that did very similar kinds of things, which would be the Southwest Indiana Chamber of Commerce, the Growth Alliance for Greater Evansville, which was the regional local economic development organization for Evansville and Vandenberg County, and then the Economic Development Coalition of Southwest Indiana, which I headed up, which was the regional organization that focused on community and economic development in a 4-county footprint in Southwest Indiana. And we had always been thinking about how can we leverage each other's assets and ability to work together. And uniquely enough, we were all located in the same structure, in the same building, that one of the legacy organizations, the Growth Alliance, actually manage. And so for us during the pandemic, prior to the pandemic, we sat back and said, hey, is there a way for us to be more closely aligned? And then the pandemic came along, and we accelerated those discussions.
And that was really one of my questions. I wondered what impact the pandemic has had on your organization and your region.
Well, I think, you know, for the region, obviously everybody has been impacted by it. I think it has certainly had a significant impact upon the business community, but one of the value adds that we've done is have one singular voice. Instead of having multiple organizations try to address the business community, we purposely came together and said, let's have one singular voice, and that's what we did during this entire process. And I think it really demonstrated our value to the broader business community as a whole, is because we ultimately then became that go-to group to address some of the issues as we're going through the pandemic. In fact, just 2 days ago, we had a very large town hall, a virtual town hall, about the new mask protocols and other kind of things, and looking at what's happening with the Delta variant. We had almost 200 people on the call. Wow. And so I think for an organization such as ours in particular, being that one central point really adds greater value to the broader region.
What were some of the outcomes of that conversation? I'm curious to know what your thinking is, because we're all wondering the same thing.
In terms of with the mask and things of that nature?
Exactly.
Well, it's kind of interesting because it's really been uneven. When you look at a market such as ours that abuts up to, in terms of southeast Kentucky or northwest Kentucky and southeastern Illinois, we have a labor shed that encompasses three states. And then when you look at Illinois, Kentucky, and Indiana, even in early stages of the pandemic, we're all a little bit different. Mm-hmm. And how, even though we're literally crossing the river to shop, to work, to provide other kinds of health services, what have you, and it was kind of, I always found it really ironic where you might not be able to, in particular in Kentucky, be able to sit down in a restaurant, but you could go literally across the river and about a 10-minute drive, go into Evansville, and you could sit down at a restaurant. And so for us, it's sort of navigating all the various parts and pieces. And I think as you're kind of looking at it, part of it is common sense. Now, we have some really great healthcare systems, and the super thing about our region is that we have a couple really large healthcare systems that sort of, I hate to say dominate, but they become really incredibly important for us as a region because health and life sciences is our second largest sector. But with Deaconess, as well as Ascension St. Vincent's, they've given us great guidance about where we need to be on this. And candidly, you can look at what each of the states are doing, particularly where you're looking at Indiana or you're looking at Illinois or Kentucky, and everybody's a little bit different. Having one sort of regional source for this kind of information, I think, helps us, especially because we share these labor sheds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was wondering about that because you're looking in three different places to see what the rules are.
And it gets a little dicey. Mm-hmm. I always found it really funny because you can – certainly Indiana is always a little bit different. Kentucky and Illinois seem to be a little bit stricter. Now what's happening now, for the most part, though, in all the schools as they're coming back, most of the school corporations are saying we want to be masked. And it's been kind of one of those back and forth things. Here in our market in particular, we have a couple large concerts coming up. We have one this weekend, which is the Hank Williams Jr. concert at the Ford Center. And we've got a couple of other concerts coming up. Blake Shelton, I mean, there'll be thousands of people. I think Styx is coming in where you're beginning to see all these activity coming back. So we're all a little, I should say, concerned, but at the same time, is just trying to understand that when you bring in a large concert, and let's say it's somebody like Blake Shelton, you're bringing people in from a much broader area, and then will everyone have the same concerns for safety as the community would here in the greater Evansville area? So we're just kind of thinking through that. No one certainly wants to take a step back, but at the same time, in order to move forward, we're really hopeful that people will take precautions.
What do you see happening right now in terms of the Delta variant in your healthcare system? Has it started to impact it, or are you seeing any sign of it in your area?
Well, it certainly has to an extent, Dean. I mean, it's that's one of the reasons why we work so closely with Deaconess and Ascension St. Vincent, and then we're in turn distributing that information to the business community. So a lot of our businesses within the region take a lot of their cues from our healthcare systems because they know the local data, and that's really helped them think through it of how they implement within their own businesses any type of mandates that may come about.
I understand. What other trends, in addition to COVID and the treatment of it, what other trends do you see going on in economic development, and where do you see us going overall with the profession of economic development? What do you see coming?
Well, those are really good questions, Dan. I think for us in particular is the very first thing we started doing in particular was redefining our region. What does our region look like? Traditionally, we've worked in the four counties of which we're part of the Evansville, Indiana, Henderson, Kentucky Metro. But considering how we've branched out through our organization, for example, we are the host for the SBDC in terms of for the state of Indiana, what they've done. Most of the SBDC centers are tied into universities. We're the only one that's not in Indiana. And so that overnight, because we basically are partnered through these legacy organizations, came together where we oversee that service. We now are nine counties in those areas. So we are constantly redefining what we mean by region. So I think organizations need to do that very thing. Because you can't always think, hey, I only do X, and I'm only interested in doing this. The reality is that regardless if you're one county or one community, everything is interconnected. And you have to understand that and recognize that interconnectivity. And if you don't, then I think that you'll probably lose out some opportunities from that standpoint. I think for trends, as you're looking at, if you look at the state of Indiana in particular, they've always been looking at economic development as a very transactional process. And by that, I mean, you kind of just look at project by project by project, hoping that you will be able to, in particular, have some success. We're really focused now, and we have been for us, of building a better quality of place. Because if we create this quality of place where people actually would like to come here, live here, work here, then the ability for us to retain and attract talent is pretty critical. there's a nuance there, but it is different from looking from economic development, saying, okay, I just landed this new project. Well, what does that mean for us? More than likely, if we can attract in greater level of talent, that talent then will dictate somebody making an investment here, because you have the talent is needed for them to make that investment. And so it's just, it's a fundamental shift and change, and I think that will probably be becoming more and more important. And you really saw it during the pandemic of how people shifted over, if they could, not everybody could, but if they could, to remote work. And the ability to do remote work, I mean, you're looking at companies like Salesforce and others saying, hey, we're going to go remote work forever. And they're not necessarily going to require people to be in offices. Well, if that's the case, and if you can work from anywhere, do you want to work in large urban centers, or do you want to work in maybe smaller urban centers, those tertiary markets, or in rural areas, as long as you have the digital infrastructure? That's so important. And maybe that's the last thing that flows into this. Digital infrastructure is critical for any of this activity to occur. And without it, I think communities are going to be able, they will continue to struggle.
Well, I see under the current infrastructure bills that there's quite a bit of money going into that category, so perhaps that'll help us too.
There's a lot of money going into it, but they're always, it's not always easy to use. Mm-hmm. And so that's part of the problem with all these federal programs, is that it sounds like on the surface, and especially with the old legacy organization, the Coalition, we worked in that space. I mean, we beyond the Regional Cities Program, which we secured $42 million for our region, we've secured more than $80 million for grants for our communities, mostly for capacity building, and we work in that federal and state space. The reality is, for all these programs, on the surface look great, but in many cases, what happens is that can you actually tap into those funds? Because the rules and regulations are not, I mean, they're still attached to those funders and those source of funds. And so if you can't follow those rules and regulations, no matter how great it sounds, you may not be able to tap into those funds.
I understand. What do you see as far as the region in terms of your new structure? So now you're 9 counties and you're reaching out to the world. Are you continuing to do your traditional business attraction, or it sounds like you've shifted over more and more towards the talent side of the question. Is that the case?
It's a combination of both. So within our primary group, it's 4 counties, and within some of our partnerships are 9 counties. So it just depends. So that's one we kind of have to look at what hat we're actually wearing. So it's a combination of both. We're looking at the traditional things we've done in economic development, but we're also looking at how that's all connected. And so it's not just looking at just from a transaction, looking at that project and only solely looking at that project and nothing else connected. We're looking at if there's an opportunity there for a business to make an investment, then how do you connect that talent to stay here, to attract them to that they were retained here? And then how do we help that talent in particular become engaged and involved in the community? And what are those wraparound services that are needed to be provided so they can actually stay here? The worst thing that could happen is you attract in a new investment or you attract in new talent, and for whatever reason, you've not done the requisite things for your community to retain that talent, and that they say, well, I'm going somewhere else. I've never really been fully engaged. And so for us, it's a combination of things. It's doing the traditional things we've done in the past because it helps drive the economic engine, but recognize at the same time that they're interconnected and that these are not siloed kinds of activities. And maybe that's a fundamental difference as we're looking at economic development. We always have a tendency to look at things in a very narrow viewpoint, where we have to, our prism is much wider now as we're looking at what we want to achieve with our overall regional strategy, which is called Talent 2025, that is really focused on population growth. It's focused on education outcomes. It's focused on better health outcomes. It's focused on how do we address the issue of poverty. I mean, these are the kind of things that we're doing this in an integrated process, rather than all the great activity we've done in the past, sort of doing it in a silo fashion that we never really connected and see how well we've done. And maybe more broadly, we're actually measuring the effectiveness against 10 other peer communities across the country.
How are you doing the peer comparison? I'm very interested in that.
Well, we worked with a firm to help us do that analysis early on. It's kind of one of those things where it'd be great for the Evansville region to think, hey, let's compare ourselves to Austin, Texas, or let's compare ourselves to, you know, Denver, Colorado. The reality is we're not anywhere close to that. And so we looked at communities that have a lot of similarities to us across the country, and some were aspirational. We looked at communities such as Greenville, South Carolina, or Grand Rapids, Michigan. We did look at aspirational like Omaha, Nebraska. But we also look at communities that are Spartanburg, South Carolina, or in Fort Wayne, Indiana, Green Bay, Wisconsin, that have a lot of similarities. The communities that had a real manufacturing background, in many cases, some of those communities are on water or bodies of water. They certainly were impacted by universities, but not considered a university community. And that in many cases, too, that they're not really where they have a major military presence. And so we started looking at that, and then we honed out 10 communities across the country that we thought that we want to compare ourselves to. And there are 32 specific metrics that we track on an annual basis. But out of those, there are probably 8 that really are critical. And those 8 have helped us build our Talent 2025 plan. That's been the framework for as we move forward. And I'd be the first to tell you, you've got to start somewhere. You've got to do a baseline information data. What's it look like today? And in order to move forward, then create those strategies and then develop tactics that allows us to have really significant change over a period of time. And maybe more importantly, everyone has to understand this is a long-term vision and nothing's going to change overnight. Certainly, we believe we've had some short-term successes, and we want to hail those short-term successes. But you have to understand you're going to be at this as a long slog, because the issues that created your region, your community, in many cases, if it's negative, didn't occur overnight. You're not going to solve those problems overnight. That said, I think in most cases, you could tactically look at things that you can do early on to make changes in the community, and that's what we've done.
Back to talent just for a second. What are some of the things that you're working on to attract talent? I know a while ago you and I had an opportunity to do a pilot project, and since then you've carried on with some other efforts. Tell us a little more about how you're going about doing that and what kind of success you've been having.
Well, we've actually started another pilot project, but a much larger one now, and a couple things as it relates to talent. So one is a specific talent-based initiative that is identifying through a specific algorithm those individuals who, and it has a lot of similarities to what we did, Dean, but it's probably on steroids, of individuals who might have some affinity to Indiana, and in particular to Southwest Indiana within a 100-mile radius. And we're identifying those individuals and starting having conversations with them to create actually identifiable pools of potential talent. And so that's one of the things that we're doing. I think the other thing that we're doing is creating a more of a global brand for our region. And we've been working on that, and we're probably going to take that up to the next level, especially as we're moving forward with Talent 2025, is that you have to be from somewhere. And so for us, we're trying to create this brand that also impacts what we're doing internally within the region, that people feel better about themselves. But externally, we're trying to say, here are the attributes that our region exhibit, and here's an opportunity for you to be engaged and involved in it. And so we're going to be stepping up our efforts in that regard starting in by the end of this year. We've already started it. But we're actually going to be spending quite a bit of money and investment in that area. And that's something that sometimes people don't understand from a marketing standpoint. You could spend a great deal of money on marketing, but it has to be very strategic and making sure that you're looking for specific outcomes from that regard. And that's kind of where those two focus areas. But within Talent 2025 itself, we have significant work streams that we work together, especially as we're looking at very specific outcomes in what we're trying to do with regard to education, both in terms of K-12, but also higher ed in particular, looking at health outcomes. We realize we've got some challenges in health outcomes, and part of that, as you're looking then, are doing simple kind of things where you're looking at engaging complete streets through your transportation network, or looking at such things as creating your trails network and how is that connected, and are you creating these really significant trail hubs where people can actually build and live and work around these things. Part of this transportation infrastructure. So it's looking at from a multi-mobility standpoint. And for us, and doing that in concert with all the other partners, it makes it a much powerful voice and a much more powerful activity in that process.
One of the things I noticed on your LinkedIn profile, you said economic development is a team sport, and it seems like you've certainly been carrying that out in your regional efforts with connecting with the other organizations and bringing them together and hopefully giving. And you also said it starts with a vision and succeeds with a commitment. It sounds like you have the vision. Are you able to generate the commitment as well?
It actually has been quite significant for us as a region. Just thinking about something that like the talent project that we're talking about, we're going to probably be spending in the neighborhood of about $320,000 on that. And not every community wants to do those kind of things. We all talk about it, what you have to do, but at some point in time we said we have to do these things. So if we were to implement everything that we want to do with Talent 2025, it would cost us over $100 million. And so what we're trying to do slowly but surely are looking at those areas that we can make some significant investments in. A great example of that is in their downtown core of Evansville, which was older but one of our tallest building. We're actually redeveloping this entire block. And in fact, there's going to be a major implosion that we're doing an event November 21st of this year. We're imploding two buildings. And that, and its replacement will be a $70 million investment. And so for us, I think we're making these strategic investments that are critical for the region to help change what people think about the region, but also bring very high level of value for our ability to attract people to live, but also attract people to work. And that for companies will come in and say, hey, this is a place for us to make investments. Look at what they're doing to change the core of their community. And so we've made some significant investments in the past through the new School of Medicine downtown. But regionally, as we're looking at it, I think the big thing for us, we recognize, Dean, within our market, we have some large demand generators for employment. In particular, Toyota just announced earlier this year, we have a large Toyota motor manufacturing in Indiana here. So for the Sequoia, the Sienna, the Highlander, they're all manufactured here at our facility. And some of those products are going to be going away, but they're bringing in two. Toyota announced an $803 million investment, additional 1,400 new jobs, which will take them up to 9,000 people employed when this is all complete, of two new EV vehicles. One will be a Toyota, one will be a Lexus, the first nameplate Lexus in our market. And for us, we want to continue to entice and support those kind of investments, but it's so important for us as a broader region because we're not afraid of manufacturing. People still have to make things, and we embrace it, but it puts us in a better position for those manufacturers or supply chain that they know the infrastructure is in place for them to consider being in here. And then we have some other larger manufacturers where Alcoa, Kaiser, large aluminum manufacturers are in our market. Berry Global is headquartered here. I mean, they have 45,000 workers across the globe. They're headquartered here and have a large presence here. Or companies like Sabic Innovative Plastics, which has a massive plastics resin facility here. Or AstraZeneca, in terms of some of the products that they manufacture here, especially for diabetes and cardiac care, manufactured in our market. And so for us, we find ourselves supporting those businesses because they support so much of the economic activity that happens within our broader region.
Back to the Toyota announcement of their expansion, any special efforts underway to recruit those 1,400 new workers that they'll be looking for?
1,400 workers, yes. So that's part of our pilot project that we're working on. And you have to be able to demonstrate to the company in particular, because a company like Toyota, they can deploy capital wherever. And so we wanted to make sure part of our responsibility was just at least having a discussion with them of illustrating here's how we want to approach that very thing. And so when you look at someone like a Toyota, 1,400 direct employees that they want to be able to attract, that doesn't include their supply chain or what happens through retirement and attrition. So more than likely, that number probably is closer to 2,200 to 2,500. And then you also want to have less of an impact upon your regional business community because they're still looking to expand. They're still looking at other opportunities. I think part of what's happening too, Dean, is because of as companies are looking at, especially any new investments, is there an opportunity for them to integrate technology into this? And then if that's the case, that could mean fewer workers, but those workers that are there now may have to be significantly retrained. How are we assisting in that regard? And then in particular, what level of technology do we need to support for all this activity to occur. And so for us, it's just having, if you don't have these relationships with your broader business community or with your various partners, either from nonprofits or your public partners, then you're probably going to leave something on the table and not be as effective overall as you could be. If you're looking, again, from an economic development standpoint, is purely just being a transactional process, just looking at one project at a time and not seeing the bigger picture, then more than likely those communities in the future will struggle. That's not to say that some communities are just hot because they're hot, because somebody wants to go there. They're going there for another reason. But I think for a region such as ours, we can't afford to let anybody fall through the cracks. So that's why it's really critical for us to work in a cohesive manner.
The topic as much discussed today has been inclusion, equity, and equality, as well as social justice. Is your organization also addressing those three topics?
Absolutely. In fact, we have an entire series on DEI, in diversity, in exclusive in terms of inclusion, and equity and inclusion. And so for us, and we're looking at the business community helping us drive it, we have some great examples in our market, whether it be Berry Global or Old National, which is headquartered here. They have been engaged and involved in diversity and equity and inclusion for quite some time. And we want to utilize, or a company like Toyota, we want to utilize them in that regard. So, yes, it needs to be more than just a checking a box, mm-hmm. in terms of when you're looking at diversity, equity, inclusion. We're also looking at internally, thinking about some of our programs that we have. So we have a loan program that we have, and we're asking our partners, are we better served than saying, it's great to say we want to acknowledge and recognize that we want to address diversity, equity, inclusion, but at the same time, are we as better served by saying, okay, we have this loan program here, why don't we dedicate some of those loans in particular to small business, but also small minority-owned businesses, and helping them through our SBDC or through some of our loan program, actually finding the funding and helping them, making sure they have the tools to start their business and get it off the ground. I think that's as powerful as anything of saying we've just checked the box and saying we want to address equity, but in this particular case, we're saying we're going to put our money where our mouth is, and we're putting our funding into helping these new startups begin in our market.
Very cool. You've been identified as one of the top 50 economic development professionals in North America by Consultant Connect, and I think your recognition is well-deserved. Greg, I've known you for a very long time, and you've always been forward-looking, forward-thinking, and always have a broader perspective than many in economic development. I love what you're doing relative to broadening the definition even of what economic development is and looking at more of a community development approach to it, and realizing if Evansville and the region is a great place to live, it'll be a great place to work and to attract companies, and as well as your existing companies expanding. So congratulations on all your efforts.
Thank you very much, Dean. I do think it continues to evolve. The blending of community and economic development, it's really hard to separate one from another. And if you do it that way in the community, if you do all the things you've done in the past, more than likely you're going to probably be challenged. I mean, just think in the last 60 days or last 6 months, what hasn't changed not just our market, across the country, across the globe? And to do the traditional things you've done in the past, I'm not saying you won't have some success, but I just can't imagine long term you'll have the kind of success the community really strives for. And so for us, it's more important for us to be in the game than sit on the sidelines and watch it pass us by.
I understand. Well, you're certainly in the game, Greg, and I appreciate you taking the time today and want to thank you for the opportunity to have this conversation. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Whitaker Report, Seeing Around Corners. And a special thanks to Greg Walton for helping us better understand the changes taking place in the regional economic development world as we respond to the changes taking place around us. Again, I'm Dean Whitaker, your host. Thank you for listening.